Merkle Media.
Driver's door, ran out the side of the car, across the front of it, and jumped right off the side of the bridge in front of me.
The only people that really pulled over were truckers.
He said, "We're going Hodge," and he didn't slow down. He went across the median onto the oncoming traffic, but where they could see him coming, they just got out of the way.
I noticed his plane was really low. It went right in front of us, hit the fence, and it spun around. You know, 30 seconds more, he could have hit us.
And I went around that truck, and a guy stepped out from behind the truck and threw a piece of wood, and it shot through my window just like a spear and stuck in the back of the cab of my truck.
That's probably one of the stranger things I've seen.
Welcome to Hammer Lane Legends, everybody. I am your host, Tony Merkle. Alongside of me is my dad, Brian Merkle, but he's not here right now because we just came from his house for Father's Day. So I'm recording this intro and outro alone, flying solo today. But we have a great experience for you guys to listen to on this show. But before we get to the business, let's get to the business and talk to you about how you can reach us. If you have a crazy and wild experience that you want to share on this show, just shoot us an email, hammerlanelegends@gmail.com. That's hammerlanelegends@gmail.com, or go to the website hammerlanelegends.com, hit the contact section, and you can reach us that way as well. Either way works for us. Just get a hold of us, because we are looking for people who drive for a living and have crazy experiences from the road to share on the show. Now today we have Mike coming on the show, and Mike is actually somebody who has an Instagram channel of over 60,000 people following him. He's called the Boston Trucker, and he comes on the show today to talk about his experiences driving and one wild story with a lady that he picked up and wound up hanging around the truck for a lot longer than he expected. Let's get to it right now. All right, today we got Mike Gaffin on the show. How you doing, Mike?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm doing good, man. So I want to introduce you a little different right now. Today we have the Boston Trucker on the show, because that's what you go by on social media and stuff, which you have a big social media presence between YouTube, Instagram, Facebook. So before we get into that, though, how did you get into trucking, period? Because it seems like you've been doing it for quite a while, over 20 years now, right?
Yeah, I've been driving for 31 years legally. My dad was a trucker. My dad started in the 1960s, hauling beef, and then was a Teamster through the 70s, doing LTL. And I started riding with him when I was a kid, you know, in a white 9000 sitting on a milk crate with no seatbelt on. And around 1980, with deregulation, all the LTL companies were going out of business, and he ended up to put food on the table, ended up started driving over the road. And so I spent my summers in the trucks with him, and school vacations and cab overs, running out to Chicago and eventually up to California. And I had the bug early. I had the bug from about 6 years old, and I eat, breathed, and just dreamt trucks. And that's where I was heading no matter what. So, and my parents didn't want me to be a trucker. My father would always tell me, you know, I didn't work this hard for you to be a trucker. I didn't bust my butt. And he was unloading freight and everything else. And, yeah, they didn't want me to become a trucker, but it was happening. So.
Sounds like a similar story with me and my dad.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, I'm yes, sure. Sir. Yeah. Dads know best, don't they?
You got that right.
But you know, I have no regrets. It's been a good career. I'm happy with it. I'm glad that I can't imagine me doing anything else.
Yeah, you know, we have the same story here where my dad always told me he didn't want me to become a truck driver. And, you know, he would say things to me like, get your grades up or else you're going to drop out of school and become a truck driver like me. And,
right.
And so, but then I remember the one day I called him and I said to him, Dad, I need money. I'm like, can you recommend me to the company that he was driving for? And he's like, are you sure? And I was like, yeah,
that's funny.
And so that's how I got into it. Well, I mean, I had my CDL for a while, but, you know,
sure.
he kind of got me into the company and we both do LTL. So, you grew up always just wanting to be a truck driver. And it's funny because I think that a lot of guys, for most part, tend to be on default with truck driving. They kind of just fall into it, but it seems like you actually intentionally, mm-hmm. this is what you were going to do.
It was. I mean, I didn't picture myself being a local driver. Once I got the road bug, the first trip, I was like, I was hooked. I'm like, I got to drive over the road. And I kind of went underground with my desire to want to drive a truck because I knew my parents were so against it that I knew how to drive a truck. My dad taught me how to, here's my dad. Here's how you drive a truck. He let me drive on the highway, 15 years old, bobtailing in a white road boss. And here's how you drive. And this is how you do it. But don't be a truck driver. It's like dangling candy in front of a little kid.
Yeah, you got that right.
Yeah. I'm going inside the dispatch. Go and hook the truck and bring the truck around. Here's the trailer number. Go hook up to the trailer and bring it around. But don't be a truck driver. So I went undercover, like underground. Once I was my senior in high school, I was going to this truck driving school. I was 18. And for $50 a lesson, I knew how to drive forward. And this guy was teaching me how to downshift better and how to back in the docks. He took me for my test. So I went with him. I did like three lessons, went for my road test, passed my test. I'm like, hey, I got my license. I'm still in high school. And it was tough because I got a driving job after school and my grades just started slipping like real bad. And then my father was like, well, if you're going to be a truck driver, you need to know how to fix trucks. So you should go to the community college and you can get an associate degree in diesel mechanics and learn how to fix trucks. And I did that, but I was still driving at night. And that lasted about a year and a half. And I was done with it. And then just started driving full time. So I was like 18 and a half, maybe 19.
Wow. So 19 years old and you're driving full time. That's the times that you could do that. I think the age is now 21?
Well, it's 21 if you leave state. You can drive 18 interstate.
I got you.
But I didn't live by those rules. So by the time I was 19, I was driving coast to coast for a company call. I can say it now because they're out of business and statute of limitations, I'm pretty sure. And plus, I talked about it on social media. I was driving coast to coast by the time I was 19 for a company called Land Transport in Framingham, Massachusetts. I started working there local, and then one night a driver called in. He's like, can you make a run? I think I was going down to Jersey and then Indiana, and I was off to the races, and I never looked back, and they just said, don't get caught, and I didn't.
So, don't you love it? Those are the days, right?
Yeah, I was driving a cab over international. The truck didn't even have a mattress. I remember the night, like I was the end of my day shift. And he was like, "Can you go?" And it was an old international that I was driving every day, a cab over 9670, no mattress. They kind of retired the truck, but it was like my little baby. And I went. I had no bed, no clothes, no shower bag. It just took off, and I was gone for the next 20 years, pretty much, till I started working local about 10 years ago. But yeah, it was good times. Got away with a lot.
Yeah, I can imagine. Yeah, with DOT regulations these days and stuff, it's a different world for drivers today than it is back then and stuff. I mean, even the guys that I've seen start out since I've been driving, I mean, from the time that I've been driving in the industry, which has been going on, well, LTL industry, it's been 8 years now, that it just... Mm-hmm. The regulations have changed so much over the last 8 years. I can't imagine how much life was easier in the sense that you didn't have so much regulations holding you down and everything. And everybody's required to have e-logs now. And it's very interesting. Yeah.
I'm glad I get up before he logs and deaf fuel. I don't know anything about deaf. I got an older truck.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, it was all paper logs, and it was who could play the game the best. My dad would always say, if you're not running two logs, then you're not working hard enough. It doesn't really make sense, but that was his logic.
Yeah,
I was running kind of 4,000 or 5,000 miles a week for many, many years, and had a lot of energy, and I didn't drink coffee, and I didn't do drugs, and I was just ran a lot of miles. I ran more than 5,000 some weeks, and you do it in 6 or 7 days, and you just, you know, Hammer Lane was that, your Hammer Lane legend. It was out in the Hammer Lane. I don't know about the legend part. Legend's kind of an overused word these days. I mean, if you didn't hear about me before social media, I don't think I'm much of a legend, but Hammer Lane for sure.
So you went to school, you were going to school for diesel mechanics, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
That, how much did that play into helping you out on the road at times? Because I imagine breaking down and stuff. I mean, if I break down, I don't know anything I'm looking at. So it's just call and break down and have somebody who knows what they're looking at to come out.
Sure.
But, you know, owning your own rig, I imagine that's something that really came in handy.
Well, sure. I never owned my own rig, but I've always been a company driver. But yeah, definitely. I mean, changing the fuel filter, adjusting trailer brakes, you know, things like that. Greasing the truck yourself, you know, things like that definitely helped. And I was never really hugely mechanically inclined, but I could definitely get myself out of jams, little electrical problems, always carrying tools with me and electrical tape, and at least to get you to a shop, you know, back then.
Yes, that's it. You know, when I learned, you were taught how to adjust trailer brakes, and you knew what, you know, what tools you need to have with you. That's just the way it was. I mean, you know, I don't know. It's not like that now. I know that, but it was that way when I mean,
every trucker carried how many 9/16 wrenches did you have back then?
Exactly.
And that's all you could ever find in your toolbox was a 9/16.
Yes, sir. That's right.
I don't know how to adjust trailer brakes at all.
Now, thankfully, the company we work for, we don't have to. You know, they don't want us to. They don't.
Sure.
They literally do not want us to work on do anything like that now. But that's just the way it is. I mean, that's the try. I mean, you know, but back then that was not, you did it. You, if your brakes need to be adjusted, you did it. You know, you just
absolutely
did what you needed to do. And that's just a small thing, but it's, you know, is a game changer when compared to now, how much time you waste going over to the shop, playing the game, waiting for a mechanic to come out, adjust your brakes, do this, do that, do whatever you need to have done. So, you know, but it nowadays it's all timed, it's all ELD logs, it's all, you know, all this stuff. So it is a different world. It's a whole different world from even when I started, and I'm in it almost 30 years.
What year did you start? Okay, it's also about the same as me.
Yeah,
and you've always been in LTL?
Yeah, for the most part. Okay. I mean, yeah, I did, you know, just produce and that kind of stuff early on, then some bulk tanker, and then I got into the real LTL end of things. In around 95, 96, and I've been in LTL since then. So, but
LTL.
Yeah. I mean, I did the daytime gig like Tony does, you know, the P&D, and now I've been doing line haul for 20 years, and I'd much rather work at night and not deal with the traffic and the people and the headaches.
You're a special breed guy.
Yeah.
Not everybody can drive all night.
Yep, that's true.
Yeah,
and you hear that a lot from the guys.
Yeah, I've done the line haul. I worked for R&L Carriers for a while. Did some line haul, P&D. I worked for New Century. You guys ever hear of New Century?
Oh yeah.
I worked for them for 8 years, running Jersey to Maine, doing LTL every day. My next YouTube video is going to be my story of New Century. I might have to out a few people though. I don't know. I'm thinking about it.
That's funny.
Yeah.
They went out, right? Not too long ago, right? A couple years ago?
Yeah, they went out in 2010. 2009. Yeah, I left there at the end of 2009. That was a great job, man. That was a six-figure job. I don't think I slept the 8 years I worked there, though. Well, the first 6 years, I ran regional Jersey to Boston to Maine every single day. You'd leave Jersey, 1, 2 in the morning, drive up, drop 10 to 20 stops, reload, back down to Jersey, get back down to West Hampton, New Jersey, which is 85 miles south of the George Washington Bridge. It's not like you're at the top of New Jersey. You go to bed for a couple hours, maybe three, and they ask you, "Oh, you know, you got to be back up in Boston at 7 a.m. Can you do it?" And you always said, "Yeah," because otherwise, some days you get stuck at the terminal with nothing to do, or you'd have to go local, which meant going to the island or wherever. There's nothing you really wanted to do, so you always turned. You didn't sleep. You get home Saturday morning. I'd be like a zombie till I left back out Sunday night or Monday morning, miserable. But I mean, I didn't know any different. I mean, it was. I won't say it's miserable. It is what it is back then. But now when you look back, you go, wow, how the hell did I do that? Why did I do that? What was the big payoff?
Yeah.
You know, a few extra bucks. You know, I guess the glory to say I did it. You know, and we go convoy. We'd leave at 1 a.m. all tied, 5-6 of us. And we'd left lane right over the George Washington Bridge, right over the Cross Bronx, and limp our way up into the Northeast.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, the thing is like, you know, you've been doing this since you're 19 years old, had the bug since you're, you know, 15. And so it just becomes part of life. It becomes part of what you do. This is who you are. This is what you do. And so, you know, just it just becomes part of your everyday. And even though, you know, you're working, you're getting 3 or 4 hours of sleep a day and, you know, that kind of stuff, it just becomes part of it. And you accept it as part of what we do. You know, that's just how things are.
You're correct, and then at some point, and not everybody figures this out. And obviously, you gentlemen have is at some point, work life balance is the key.
Yeah,
and you got to find that happy medium, because you can't run like that your whole life. You're just going to be a broken down old man with nothing to show for it.
Yeah, you're going to be a broken down old man early. You know, because it's going to wear you out.
I look at my dad. My dad's a broken down old man because he did it till he retired, and it's sad to see what's become of him from all the hard running he did and the unhealthy choices while driving, eating, and the lack of exercise. And it's tough. I definitely don't want to become that. And I got off the road when we got pregnant with our first kid, 13 years ago. Wow. 13 years. I can't believe it. I still feel like I'm an over the road driver, but yeah, 13 years ago. I live vicariously through all my road guys, and I miss it every day and dream about, maybe I'll take a trip once a year for a couple of weeks. But man, it's nothing. You can't put a price on being home every day and being home with your family and kids. Yeah, I know you guys know that.
Yeah. You know, I learned early on in the industry that I can't just keep going the way I was going. Cause when I first got into it, I mean, I was doing like close to 70 hours a week. I mean, 6 a.m, I'm going home at 9 o'clock at night. And just, you know, and I was loving it. I was like, yes, I'm loving this, because I was making more money than I ever made in my entire life. And, you know, it was just me and my wife, and she had her job. So it wasn't like she was home by herself all day. And I was just go, 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 go. And it at some point it got to me, and I was just like, you know, I don't think I can do this forever like this. Like, some point, it's just like, this is exhausting. And I have no life. And at one point, right, I was okay with like not having a life. All my friends, they'll be like, you know, hey, you want to come over? It'd be a Wednesday. No, I can't. I'm working. And I was fine with it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm still fine with it in the sense that I really don't hang out with people. But now we have a kid and one on the way. And I want to see those people. And it's like all of a sudden, the people in my life that I do want to see, I'm not seeing. And that created a real problem for me. And so I had to start, you know, cutting my hours back at work. And the only way I could do that was to create, you know, side income. And so 3 years ago, I started podcasting. And, you know, that's kind of what I do to stay afloat. But I saw that you are on different platforms. And I think your biggest platform is Instagram. But even on YouTube, you have like almost 15,000 subscribers on YouTube.
Yeah.
Like what?
Crazy.
What inspired the whole like social media thing that you're doing right now? I mean, it's not like something that you grew up seeing. So at what point did you say, no, hey, this would be a good idea?
I don't know. It was just such a fluke. I remember making a video for my son. He was about 2. It was right when I was working for New Century. By the last couple of years, I was local for them, making a video, going, hey, Nathan, this is your dad. This is I'm on the job. And I put that on YouTube just for the hell of it. And then I made, and then I got into dirt hauling when New Century went out, and I made another video, and I just kind of posting videos. Like, I post them on YouTube every once in a while. They're not like, my videos are not high quality, high production. I don't even put that much thought into, I don't think about, oh, today I'm going to make a YouTube video. And I would just put stuff on YouTube, and I got a pretty good following. And then I went on Instagram like 5 years ago just to promote my YouTube page. Like, I didn't even know you can make money on YouTube till like a couple of years ago. And it's not a lot of money, but you can make a few bucks. And so I promoted it on Instagram, and I've got pictures of trucking since I was a child. My dad always took pictures. So people knew me for my pictures on, like, there was a famous truck website called hankstruckpictures.com that had pictures all over the world. So I had hundreds and hundreds of pictures on there, and it just kind of exploded. My YouTube doesn't take off as much. I mean, if I was a hot chick lady trucker, I'd probably have like 300,000 followers on there. I can't bridge that gap. I just can't. And I'm not going to. So I'm just going to post my videos. I still don't have an introduction to my video. Some of my videos, I can't even watch my own stuff. I hate the way I sound. But and the comments on YouTube are so brazen by some people. They are just brutal. Like, it's crazy. And Instagram, I love Instagram. And Facebook's been great because I was having a pretty good following. I did truck shows all through the 90s, like the big truck shows. I got pretty well known there. That might have carried over into my social media prowess, I guess. I was in a lot of magazines in the 90s, and I was known as a guy who had a clean truck, and I did Louisville and Vegas and Walcott, and I got pretty well known then. So I guess that was social before social media, then it just carried into social media. But it's not nothing I really think about every day, how to put my name out there. I just like sharing my love for trucks. I love truck pictures. I'm happy. I have all these pictures from my childhood, and I took pictures at every single job, not knowing that anybody would ever see them. You know, who would know back then? Right. So I just like sharing my love for trucking, and I'm always trying to promote the positive side of trucking. I'll never tear somebody down because their truck looks stupid or they did something that just is off the wall. I try to just show everybody who aren't in the trucking industry how much we love it. And that's kind of my thought process on YouTube and Instagram and Facebook and all that stuff. Does that make sense at all?
No, that makes total sense. That's it. And yeah, it's funny because, you know, the trucking shows and all that stuff, you're right. That was the social media back then. You know, mm-hmm. So you're getting your name out there. And the funny thing is that no matter how many detractors there are out there, they're listening. You know what I mean? It's like, you might, you know, have something mean to say or bad to say about what I'm doing or what I'm saying or how this is or how my YouTube comes across or how my podcast comes across. But then why are you listening? You know, why are you paying attention to me?
Exactly.
You know? So it's kind of like,
exactly.
You know, there's this dichotomy in people's minds. That's like, you know, well, you do such a crappy job. Then why are you paying attention? You know,
exactly.
So anyway.
Exactly. And they say, oh, well, that didn't impress me. I just put up a video the other day, like 50,000 views. Well, that wasn't impressive. I'm not trying to impress you. I'm just showing you something that I thought was pretty cool.
Yeah.
And if you don't like it, scroll on to the next one. But they got to tell me how it wasn't impressive and how they can do it.
Yeah.
And my favorite one is, so I posted a video the other day, and I struggled with what am I going to put as a title. So I put it Truckers with Skills, which was a Peterbilt with a long wheelbase pulling. We pull 28-foot dump trailers. We run 100,000 pounds all day long in these little trailers. And it was driving through our yard, which is basically an alley, and you make a sharp left turn, and you get to pull up and back up three times to make the corner. And half the comments are, well, real truckers pull 53-foot trailers. You should try pulling a 53-foot trailer. I'm like, oh my God, really? I pulled 53s for 20 years, and I start getting defensive in my comments sometimes. Or I try to be smarter than them and try to make them. I'm like, oh, really? Tell me more about what real truckers do. So it's kind of crazy.
Yeah, I know. Like, you can get caught up in the whole.
Because
people, it took me a long time to understand this. I've been podcasting for 3 years, and my other show is, you know, it's a pretty big show, and I didn't understand I didn't understand this at first for the longest time, where there's people out there that literally talk trash to you just to get your attention. And it just took me a long time to understand that when you ignore them, they go away. But when you just, when you engage them, they just keep going and going and going, because they're not interested. They're not interested in having their mind changed or seeing your point of view. They're just interested in getting you riled up and getting your attention. And for a guy like me, where my time is pinched, like, I don't have time to waste on people who just, you know, want to troll and stuff. You mentioned about the comments on YouTube, man. You actually have, you seem like you have a favorable outlook on Facebook. Facebook is my, like I literally had to separate myself from Facebook for a while, and I'm still doing it. Like, for my own mental health, like, every time I look at that stupid app on my phone, I was getting stressed out because I knew that, like, every day I'm getting like almost 100 notifications on Facebook.
Oh my God.
And it's like, it's exhausting and it's stressful, because you know there's at least five people in there that just want to tear you down. And
it just
destroys your mental jive, and all of a sudden, like, you're not being productive in the things you need to be productive in, because you're thinking about somebody who's not thinking about you until you respond back to them. And it's just like, it just got to be too much.
Well, I totally can relate to that, because on Facebook, I've dialed it down on Facebook, because I know on Facebook, everybody is very critical. And I started a page, I'm going to say, got to be 10 years ago, like right when I got on Facebook, called Massachusetts Truckers. And so I was the administrator, and we grew to about 5,000 members, and it became a real group where we did truck shows, we put on charity events, we raised money for fallen drivers' families, but it was like kindergarten. And on the weekends, I am putting out fires constantly. This guy said this, this guy said that. And it came to the point where that people were threatening me, like they were, and I was being threatened by a very popular biker club guy who was like a hanger-on, going, oh, well, you know, I'm buying the name and we're going to run it my way and his money. And I'm like, you know, I just walked away. And then that night I started a new group and I went underground and I kept it private. And I brought with me about 300 people who'd never caused drama, who just like trucks. And we've been good ever since, like, for the last 3 or 4 years. So it's too much drama. It's stupid.
I know. I'm telling you, man. Like, it's crazy. I don't know what social media has done to our society, but it's not great. It's not great.
It hasn't. But it is amazing how much trucking social media is out there. Like, I wonder, are other professions, like, is there a big plumbers thing on Facebook? I don't know. Or electricians thing? I don't know. I mean, I see a truck.
Yes. Yes.
I mean, my wife's always like, how many trucks can you look at a day? I go, I don't know. I can't stop looking at trucks. Like, yeah. I'm on West Coast Retro and Old School Trucking and Truck Stops of Yesteryear. That's all I do when I'm sitting in front, when I should be watching the movie, I'm looking at my phone, looking at trucks. So
yes, it's
been on my brain since I was six.
Yes, yeah, exactly. It's interesting.
And my kids want nothing to do with it either, which I'm happy about.
Yeah, I hear that.
Yeah. Yeah. With this Corona thing, I'm like, at home, I go, any of you guys want to go work with me? I can take anybody with me anytime. Anybody want to go work with me? No, I'd rather stay home, be home, do nothing. I go, oh, wow, okay. Crazy. I would have been in my truck with my dad every day of this.
Yeah, in a heartbeat. I agree. It's funny because the very first taste of trucking I got was a long time ago. A friend of mine, his uncle had a truck and he drove a truck and he took us with him on a weekend run. It was from Allentown or Bethlehem over to Jersey somewhere and back. And I think I was probably 8-9 years old, maybe 10 at the latest. And it was just the coolest thing, you know, riding in this guy's truck with him. And I had a great time. That's probably the very first taste of trucking that I ever had. And, you know, it's funny. Okay. You don't think about those things until you're sitting and talking about it and it jogs you. And you're like, you know, that's the first time was with so-and-so's, you know, uncle. And we did this and we went and it was like, just so cool. And it does kind of put a bug in you. You know, it really doesn't. And it's one of those things that you just kind of fall in love with. Either you fall in love with it or you hate it. And, I'm here doing this for almost 30 years now and just, you know, I enjoy doing it and, I'll do it until I die or retire. One of the two, you know?
Well, it's great that you love it because can you imagine he didn't love it. And how many guys out here don't love it? And you can tell just in their demeanor, the way they carry themselves, the way the trucks look, that they just don't love it. And that's got to be miserable.
Oh, yeah. It's got to be hell. I cannot imagine doing a job that you hate doing every day for as long as you have to do this job every day. You know, I mean, this is not a 9-to-5-er. Like, you didn't sign up for a 9-to-5-er here. You know, this is not, we're going to the office.
No.
And in 8 hours, I'm out of here and I've got the rest of the day to myself. This is, you know, 10, 12 hours, 14 hours a day. That's the way it is, or more. You know, that's just how it is.
Absolutely. Like right now, I'm thinking, okay, well, in 12 hours, I'm going to be heading out the door and I got to get to my truck. And how, it's been raining here and it's been dusty. Is my truck going to be clean? And I'm kind of looking forward to getting in the truck in the morning in my office and putting on the radio show I like to listen to and just getting into my world. Like, I look forward to it every day.
Yeah, I love the mobile office. That is, you know, I can't imagine working in a, you know, and my hat's off to people who do work in a factory or work in an office who can do those things. I just can't. I can't. No. After doing this for so many years, to the thought of being in, and like I said, it's not anything against, you know, that kind of stuff. It's just I couldn't do it. You know, so I'm still doing this almost 30 years later. You know, that's just how it is.
And where do you run line haul? What's your route?
My run usually takes me over to Bedford, down to Baltimore, and then back up to Allentown. It's not a terribly long run, but it gets longer sometimes. You know, that they add this or add that. That's just the nature of line haul. But that's my normal run. That's usually what I do.
Have they fixed the roads out there yet in Pennsylvania?
And no. It's the same miserable. Old, same old. You know, it is miserable. And that's probably the worst part of it. And you just learn to ignore it and turn the radio up a little bit.
Sure. I suppose the trucks ride better than when you first started out.
Oh, my word, yeah. Back then. They really do. It's funny, you know, my truck was down for a few days this week. And so I was using one of the older trucks in our fleet. And even just going from a truck that's, you know, maybe six or 8 years old, you know, and then coming back into my truck, it was like a world of difference. I was like, you know, my truck doesn't ride that bad. Yeah. It's all, you know, it's amazing how quiet it is. It's actually nice to get back on your own. Yes, like, you do.
Yeah. Well, I know the feeling.
Yeah. I actually drove your truck, Dad, when I was helping out my dad's terminal the one day. Mm-hmm. And I go out to the truck and I recognized the number as his. And I wasn't sure, though. I sat down in the truck and looked at the inspection log and it had the same last name. And I went inside and I asked them if they did that on purpose. They said, no, who's your dad? And so I told him. But I tell you, I driving his truck, I can say one thing.
Yeah.
It's a clean truck and it does ride smooth. It does ride smooth. Now, I was used to driving an older truck at my terminal and stuff, but I remember going up there, the gear shifted nice and everything. Now we have trucks that are more automatic these days and everybody's doing the automatic thing. But yeah, it's really interesting life that we live as truckers and stuff. You being over the road and stuff, I mean, what are some things that you've seen, man? I imagine you've seen some things that kind of made you say, what? You know?
I've seen a lot of crazy stuff. You know, I pretty much was all business. Like, I was one of those guys that if you told me you couldn't get there on time, I'd be there on time. So I didn't screw around too much. I didn't hang out in Party Row, and I went to some trucker bars, and I went to the dancing girl clubs when I had a chance. And I do have a good trucker story that you guys might like that I could probably keep it PG, even though it's a rated R story.
Go for it.
You really want to hear a story?
Oh okay. Yeah,
most definitely.
Okay. All right. This is. I just actually put this on my YouTube channel the other day. I've been debating whether to tell a story for about 10 years because it's definitely my best story. So here we go. All right. I'm going to go back to 1994. I'm 24 years old. I'm driving for Budmeyer Truck Lines out of Lake City, Minnesota. And I'm on my way to LA with a delivery and I'm coming into Las Vegas and I blew a brake cam on the trailer. So I get it over to a truck repair shop called a truck wash truck repair shop called the Magic Wand in Las Vegas. And I get in there, I get in the shop, and next door there's a Mexican restaurant. And I'm eating lunch, and I go outside, I'm sitting outside, and this old Pinto pulls up, and this greasy-looking guy gets out of the car, and he opens up the hatchback, and he throws a couple suitcases on the ground, and he starts yelling at somebody in the car, and his girl gets out, she jumps out, and she's going after her bags, and he speeds off out of the parking lot. So I jump up off the bench, and I run over to help her, and helping her with the bags, and we sit down, and we start talking. I go, what happened? She goes, oh, my, she's got an accent. She's from Tennessee, and she's in Vegas, staying with one of her girlfriends from back home that lives out there now. And she's telling me how the boyfriend wanted to get together with her and she didn't want any part of it. And he said, then you're not staying here. And he took her to the truck stop. And she's supposed to meet her uncle from Tennessee, who's a trucker, who's going to give her a ride home. So I go, oh, man, that's crazy. That sucks. And I take her into the restaurant. We have lunch. We're hanging out 2-3 hours. My truck's almost ready. But by the fourth hour, the uncle hasn't showed up. And it's before cell phones. It's like she can call him and go, where are you? She goes, well, he should have been here already. I'm going to try and hitch a ride home to Tennessee out of Vegas. And I said there, I go, wow, it's probably really hard to get a ride to Tennessee out of Vegas. I'll give you a ride down to Barstow. Now, I never picked up strangers. Like, this wasn't something I just offered strange girls rides in my truck. She was very good looking and very nice. And I said, I'll give you a ride down to Barstow. And that's the crossroad where I-40 is. The truckers are driving across, that'll take you to Tennessee. So she says, okay. We go down to Barstow. We have dinner down at Rip Griffin's truck stop. I'm liking her. She seems to be liking me. I said, oh, you know, if you want, you can ride down with me to LA tomorrow morning. And I'm sure you can get a ride out of LA going to Tennessee. So we ride down to LA through the middle of the night. She goes in the bunk and goes to sleep. I get to my delivery in Santa Fe Springs. I crawl in the bunk next to her. I go to sleep. I wake up in the morning. She'd jump on my bones. So now I'm like, well, this is pretty cool. This is pretty fun. Okay. I wasn't looking for that, but hey, I'm a single guy. So we deliver in Santa Fe Springs, and I got to go down to Chula Vista, which is on the Mexican California line below San Diego. I got to pick up a load of fish. This is on Friday morning, and I got to be in Deerfield Beach, Florida, Monday morning at 1 a.m. So 2.5 days, 3,000 miles plus. And I got the girl with me, and we've decided that she's just going to ride with me. And I told her, I said, I'll be in Tennessee within a week. I'm going to go to Florida. From Florida, I'm going to go back up to the terminal in Minnesota. I got to go right through Tennessee if you want to ride with me. She's like, okay, I'll ride with you. So now I'm trucking. Like there's no time for stopping. It's a nonstop ride right from one coast to the other. And DSO Beach is almost by Miami. It's way on the other side. So we're trucking. And meanwhile, I noticed she's coming down off of something. Every time I would stop to get fuel, she'd come out with a coffee full of sugar, like 3/4 of the way. And so she was like trying to stay high on something. And second date, she's telling me she loves me, and it was kind of like a fatal attraction thing. But we're having a good time, and anytime I stopped, she wanted to jump my bones. That's what I'll say, jump my bones. And which is exhausting when you're trying to get somewhere, you know, but who am I to say no? So we're trucking along, we make it to Florida, we make the delivery, and now we're heading up to Minnesota where I got to go through Tennessee. So this is like day 5 now. And now I'm really liking her, and she wants to stay with me. So we decide she's going to stay with me, but she wants to stop at the dancing club in Kentucky where she used to dance. And can we stop in the club? I said, okay, you want to stop in the club? Sure. I said, why don't we stop? I'll pull in the parking lot. I'm going to go to sleep for a few hours. You go inside, see your friends, and I'll get a nap. She says, okay. She goes, but we need to bring our own alcohol because you have to, it's BYOB. I said, okay. So we pull in a package store, and I stop putting the alcohol in the side box. And she says, whoa, I want to have a couple before I get there. So I have a buzz on. I said, I can't have an open container in the truck. And she says, oh, wow. We're getting this big fight over this. And she goes, that's it. I'm out of here. And she takes off in the middle of the night. And I'm like, what? Just takes off. And I'm mad, so I throw out all the clothes out of the truck into the parking lot, and I take off, and about 5 miles down the road, I'm feeling like, oh, I can't believe it. This just happened. I left this girl in the middle of nowhere in the middle of the night. So I turn around, I go back, I look for her. I can't find her. There's no sign of her. So I start heading north. I get up to the pilot in Terre Haute, Indiana the next morning. I call dispatch. My dispatcher's name was Hope. I've only had two really good dispatches in my life. Hope was one of them. And I said, and then we were friends. I said, Hope, you know, hey, you know, I had this girl with me the last few days in the truck, and she took off. And she says, oh, I'm sure she's fine. I'm sure she'll turn up. And I said, okay, all right. So I went and took a shower, and like 5 minutes later, I get paged. I go to the pager. Hope says, hey, that girl just called here. I go, well, that's impressive. I can't even remember if she remembers the name of the truck company I go for, because she didn't seem that bright, you know? So I call Hope, and she said, the girl called, and she's looking for you. She wants you to come get her. I said, well, where is she? She says, she's in Columbus, Indiana. I said, I'm 100 miles past there. It's in the opposite direction. I can't go back and get her. And so I called the girl up. And so what happened was, and I didn't mention this earlier, the girl grew up in the backwoods of Tennessee. I mean, in a bad situation where there was incest and rape and things like this happened back there. And she was, you know, a victim of this her whole life. So when I tell you this part, it's hard and it's sad, but this is the fact of her life. So I get her on the phone. She's at a truck stop in Columbus. She said, oh, can you come get me? I said, I'll get you, but I can't get you right now. And I said, what happened? She goes, I was hitchhiking last night. And I was with this, I won't say the company name. I was with this truck driver. He picked me up and he raped me and he dropped me off at his truck stop. And I just want you to come get me. So I said, okay. I devised a plan. I used to work for a company in Indiana, in Evansville, Indiana, that Land Transport, who I drove cross country with when I was 19. So I called up dispatch over there. I said, hey, this is Mike. I said, hey, I got a girlfriend in Columbus. I'm on my way to Minnesota. Can one of your drivers pick her up? I knew all the drivers. They're all good guys. I said, can one of your drivers pick her up, bring her to Evansville? I'm going to go to Minnesota, unload, reload. I'll get a load coming back through, and I'll pick her up Saturday night. This is Friday. This is like Friday. So that was the plan. They arranged. They picked her up. They took her to the Motel 6 in Evansville. I went up to Minnesota, unloaded, reloaded for Florida, 1,000 miles down there, picked her up Saturday night. She was happy to see me. We drove to Florida. We were on the road a couple more weeks. And now it's time to go home to my brother's wedding. And she's with me. You guys with me so far?
Yes, sir.
Okay. I don't want to bore you.
No, no, no.
Boring,
we're good.
Let me
we're
know.
Good. Not at all.
Okay.
Not at all.
Okay. Okay. So now, we're going to my brother's wedding in Boston, and my brother tells my parents, Mike's bringing a girl to the wedding that he picked up from some truck stop. So automatically my dad's head goes, he's bringing home a lot lizard, which, you know, if anybody doesn't know, is a truck stop hooker,
yeah.
which we find out in the end was kind of close, but you know, I'll save that for the end. I didn't know that though. Well, she wasn't really. Okay. So we're going to my brother's wedding. I come from we're Jewish, and you know, we have half the family's well off, and the rest of us are just poor truckers and poor, and none of that well off, none of the well off money made it down to us. So we're gonna go to my Jewish snobby brother's wedding with my country bumpkin girlfriend, who's a foot taller than me, from Tennessee, and with a heavy accent and the Daisy Dukes, and that's how she was. And we go to the wedding, and she's having a grand time, and she's drunk. I don't really even drink that much. And when my ex sister-in-law throws the bouquet, she knocks down everybody to get it. You know, this is what we're talking about. So she gets the bouquet. She's like, Mike, we're going to get married. Ah! Okay. So I get through that embarrassment, and I had taken off a few days, and we're hitting the road, and we're on our way to Solon, Ohio. And I remember we're driving across 84, coming into Scranton, and she's telling me how she loves Boston, and she wants to move to Boston, and can I buy her, get her an apartment, and pay for last month's rent, and all this stuff. And I said, why don't you go home and save up some money, and come back to Boston and live here and get a job and we'll date. She didn't like that answer. So she took my radar detector off my dashboard and threw it out the window. So at that point, wow. I was like, that wasn't really nice, was it?
Yeah, thanks for the ride.
Old crank window, right? old crank windows too. They weren't air ride. They weren't electric windows back then. She had to actually put effort into it. So we're on our way to salon, and I say to her, I go, okay, we're going to spend the night at the customer. Let's get some food in the cooler so we have some food to eat during the night. So we bought a box of a dozen donuts. I wake up around 1 a.m. and I'm hungry. I'm looking for a donut. Now, I had been suspect that this girl had bulimia, which is also really bad, of course. You know, she weighed about 100 pounds, and she could out-eat me any day of the week. So I wake up, no donuts in the box. I give her a nudge. I go, hey, where are the donuts? She says, I ate them all. I go, you ate all the donuts? She says, yeah, I was hungry. I go, you couldn't have saved me one? She goes, no. So I look out the window, and I could see she vomited all over, outside the truck. So I'm upset, but I'm not a yeller. I'm not like screaming at her. I'm like, it is what it is. I go back to sleep. I wake up 2 hours later and she's shaking like violently. I go, what's wrong with you? What's wrong with you? She goes, well, you're mad at me. And I took 12 Sudafed pills and I'm trying to kill myself. And I'm like, oh my God, I need to get this girl home. This is not going to end well. So, and I don't want to leave her somewhere. I'm not the type of guy that's going to leave a girl and, you know, just leave her. So I go, next time I get to Tennessee, I got to get her home. And she won't get on a bus. I kept trying to get her on a bus. She wouldn't go. So we get through that. We get up to Minnesota. We're on our way to Livermore, California, which is up by San Francisco. And 4th of July weekend. And we're trucking across. And we have some time. It was a holiday weekend. And we're coming into Gordon, Nebraska. And I'm listening to the old AM/FM radio. And they're talking about, we got free barbecue for anybody who stops in Gordon. So I said there, I go, hey, let's get some barbecue. It's free. We can have some, they got music and everything. She gets really upset. I'm not going to know anybody there. And I'm like, I'm not going to know anybody there either. We're just getting some food. Big fight. Let me out of the truck. So I said, okay. I pull over and we're like just west of Gordon in the middle of nowhere. She gets out, she starts walking back east, and I start trucking west, and 5 miles down the road, I'm like, I can't just leave her here in the middle of nowhere. Turn around, beg her to get back in the truck. We go down the road, and we're heading to California. Now, as we're coming into Reno, she starts urinating blood. So I'm like, oh my God, this is getting better. So we get to I take her to the hospital. I don't even remember how I got to the hospital back then. I must have drove right to a hospital. Get to the hospital. The doctor tells me she's got bulimia. I go to the phone. I call her mom. I tell her what's going on. She's like, yeah, no, I know. She's had it for a long time. I said, okay. They gave us some medicine. We start heading to California. It's going to get better now. This is where it starts getting better. We make the delivery in California. And I don't have to pick up till the next day. So I said to her, I said, let's get a motel tonight. You get a nice meal. We have some time. Instead of sleeping in the truck, let's enjoy ourselves. So I take her to the Sizzler, which back then to me was like a really nice meal, you know. And we have the buffet. And she has like 4 plates to my 2. And she's loving it. And we get back to the motel. And she's within the motel for like 10 minutes. She says, and mind you, leading up to this point, I'm spending tons and tons of money on this girl. I bought her a new wardrobe. I'm trying to give her a little more of a conservative wardrobe, you know, because it's a little embarrassing. She walked around like she was dancing on a pole all the time. And I wasn't like that.
Right.
I was getting an advance on my check every week, like a couple hundred bucks a week. So when she asked me when we got back to the motel, can I have some money for Burger King and cigarettes? She smoked a lot. I didn't smoke, but she smoked. I was like, you just ate like a buffet. You're really hungry. She says, yeah. I said, all right, fine. Here's $5. Go next door to Burger King and get yourself cigarettes. So she says, I can't get Burger King for $5. I said, and then I said something I shouldn't have said. I was holding my tongue all this time and I said it and I shouldn't have said it. I said, well, if you held your food down, you wouldn't be so hungry, which was really an insensitive thing to say, but I said it. And she got enraged. And she said, that's it. I'm going to call the police and I'm going to tell them you raped me because, and I have the fingerprints in my legs to prove it. So the guy who raped her, he like pulled her towards him with his fingerprints were embedded like bruises in her legs. Like they were there for weeks. So I'm like, really? Are you kidding me? And I like, no one had ever treated her nice. And I was treating her, you know, she was never used to being treated nice. And I don't think she knew how to handle it. And I was like flabbergasted. Like, what do you mean you got to call the police? I haven't even, and she goes, and while you're sleeping, I'm going to get a gun and come back and kill you. And I said, okay, time to exit stage left. This time for good.
Yeah.
So I grabbed my bag. I say, I'm leaving. And she's jumping on me. Don't leave me. Don't leave me. I said, I got to go. So I get out of there. I go down to the payphone. And she's threatening to kill herself. I call her mom. I said, this is where she is. And his situation. And I have to leave. And her mom was very nice. She's like, I understand. And, you know, you did so much for her. And I said, I just got to go. So, and I left. And I actually left. And I drove an hour down the road to where I had to pick up the next morning up in Dairyman's in Tulare, California. And I picked up my load and I started heading to Minnesota. And I get down by Bakersfield. I called Hope in the morning and said, hey, Hope, I'm in Bakersfield. It's Friday morning. I'll be in Minnesota Sunday night, deliver Monday morning. She goes, hey, before you go anywhere, you left that girl in a truck in a motel last night, didn't you? I said, yeah, how do you know? She goes, she slit her wrist. She's okay. She's not dead. She's not even in the hospital. She slit her wrist. Somebody found her and she wants you to come get her. And I'm like, well, I explained to her what had happened, you know, in a nutshell. My job is in jeopardy. I can barely do my job and I can't get her. Is there any way you could arrange to get her on a bus, take it out of my money, get her on a bus home to Tennessee? So the plan's in motion. They get, she's getting on a bus Friday night at midnight out of Modesto where we were. And she's going home to Tennessee. And I'm feeling great. I'm like, oh, this is fantastic. Like, she's going home. I have no guilt. I got my truck back to myself. Meanwhile, under the bunk, I'm finding she was hoarding cupcakes and apple pies. And you know, anytime she had money, when she went to the truck stop, when I was sleeping, she was just stocking up for food to eat that I didn't even know was there. And I'm on my way to Minnesota and I'm having a great weekend. And I get up to Minnesota. I make the delivery Monday morning. And an hour out of the terminal where I have to get my truck worked on, and it's going to be down for at least a day. And I call Hope and I say, hey, I'm check calling. I'm an hour out of town. She goes, don't come here. What do you mean don't come here? She goes, she didn't go to Tennessee. She got out of town last night. She's here waiting for you. I want you to come get her. I go, how is she in Minnesota? How did she beat me to Minnesota? I had so many questions. So I go, you got to get her off the property. I said, I'm coming into town. I got to get my truck worked on. So they get her out. They get her off the property. I sneak into town from the southern route, which normally you'd come right through the center of town. I sneak into town. They put my truck right into the garage and close the doors. They whisk me out of town. They give me a ride to a motel 10 miles down the road. She was staying with another driver's family she met the night before, telling everybody how she's my girlfriend and I'm coming to pick her up.
Oh.
Yeah, she met all these drivers, and I'm Mike's girlfriend, and I'm just waiting for him. She doesn't tell him any of the other stuff. And I get her on the phone, and she's like, oh, I'm here. I didn't want to go home. I want to be with you. I love you. And I'm like, whoa. And I lied to her. I said, oh, I was here last night. I'm on my way to Seattle. And she ended up going home. They ended up, somehow she got home. Went home to Tennessee, and for like the next few months, she was calling Hope like every day. Where's Mike? Where's Mike? Tell Mike I love him. Tell Mike I want to be with him. And that went on for about 6 months, and then it stopped. And then Christmas morning, 2 years later, I'm at the Petro in just west of Nashville, Kingston Springs, Tennessee, where she's from that area. And I get a knock on the door. I look down and there she is waving, Mike, Mike, it's me. Let me in the truck. I want to be with you. Wow. 2 years later.
Talk about a stalker, yeah, huh?
Oh my God. Fatal attractions. Yeah, I go, no, go back in the truck stop and I'll meet you inside. And she went inside and I actually did. I should have just took off. And I went inside. I had questions to ask and I found out the real reason she was in Nevada. She was working in a brothel. But great. Good for me. I picked up a real working girl. She was there with her fiance who she said drove for Fry Miller, but she'll leave him right now if I say the word. And I lied to him. Oh no, I'm married and I moved to Connecticut trying to throw off the trail. And I moved to Connecticut and I'm going to be having a kid and never heard from him again. But that's my story. That's my crazy road story. My
wow.
best one.
I'm telling you, man, like that was like a nightmare, man.
Oh, good. Yeah, I'm glad you liked it. Because, you know, I left out some parts and my friends will tell you that just to keep it a little not R-rated, but it was crazy. It was a crazy, crazy few months.
Oh man, I can imagine. Like, so did you hear about it from the guys at work and stuff? I mean, since she was waiting for you at the terminal, I imagine the guys teased you for a while.
Oh yeah, no, I still get teased. I have one of my trucker friends. Whenever I bring it up in conversation, because some people know, and I'm like, oh yeah, I met her. Thanks a lot, Mike. She was asking me for money that night. You know, so
unreal.
Yeah, it was stupid because I knew. I'm not the kind of guy that's going to pick somebody out. I just did, you know, and I had the opportunity plenty of times after that where I just didn't do it, and when I wanted to though, but you know, I just didn't because you know the song. Eddie Rabbit, you know, truck stop beauty coming on to me, try to ask
yes,
me for a ride.
Sir, yes. Went,
that is that song. I love that song, you know. So, and when I hear the song, Johnny Lee picking up strangers, I'm like, oh my God, that's my jam.
Wow.
So,
that's great.
Yeah, oh thanks. Man. That, listen,
something to be proud of.
I'll tell you, you got a story. That's for sure. That's
I do.
Story.
Hey, I do have a story. That's for sure. Yep. Yeah, crazy times
for sure. And I imagine, you know, there's a lot of life lessons to be learned in there for sure.
Oh yeah.
Oh my
yeah,
God.
You got that right.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
And thank God you're working for a company that was willing to work with you. You know, the Hope was a friend and she was really, I mean, how I know I couldn't call my dispatcher and say, hey,
what's truck going to be fired on the spot? Leave your truck where you are.
Yes.
And find your way home.
Yes. Yeah, you got that.
No,
right.
I mean, they knew this wasn't like my character. Cause I mean, working there, I could do no wrong cause I was such a reliable driver, but yeah, I mean, it's crazy. Just crazy. You know? And then after that, I was, I became a Walmart driver after that for a while. And imagine doing that at Walmart. Oh my God.
They're a little more corporate. You know,
oh my God. I ended up leaving Walmart because I said, the S word on the CB radio once, and I got in trouble for that. That's like, oh my God, this is not for me. That was almost a year.
Yeah. I heard Walmart is, you know, I hear they take care of their drivers financially, but I've also heard that they're really strict with their rules and stuff like that. It's tough.
Yeah. It wasn't for me. I think I could do it now, but, you know what? It worked out in the end. I went back to Bud Meyer for 2 more years. Of course, they got bought out 2 years later, but I had the best 2 years of my career doing truck shows and having a good time. And it kind of pushed me to where I am now. And, you know, now I pull a dump trailer and haul heavy equipment locally and can't be. I work for a good little company now. So real happy with that.
Yeah. That's awesome. That's awesome. And life's a journey. Life's a journey. And when driving truck and stuff, most guys, they don't ever begin and end at one place. They've gone through different companies, different situations, and they've got different stories to share. And I'll tell you, your story is one we haven't heard before on the show. So I'm really glad you shared it. Well,
I'm glad I had one to tell.
Yeah. Well, you definitely had one to tell. Why don't you let people know where they can find you on social media, Instagram and things like that?
Absolutely. I'm the Boston Trucker on Instagram, and I post pictures and videos on there almost every day. Oh, I should also say, ever since the coronavirus started, like right when it started and everything was shutting down, I started doing live Instagram. I was doing it 7 nights a week at 7 p.m. East Coast time on Instagram. I've cut back to Monday through Friday almost every day. So every night I'm on Instagram live 7 o'clock, and I like bringing on new people. I don't really have that much to say, so I like to meet whoever I can meet, and we've had some really interesting people on there, and we got a few great regulars, and a lot of the people come on every night, and they've become really good friends, and all over the world, people are meeting up and becoming good friends because of the Instagram show, which makes me happy, and why I keep doing it, because some nights I'm like, oh, I got to do my show again. My family's like, yeah. Are you kidding me? You're going to do your show? We want to go for a walk. Can we walk every night? I'm like, I got to do my show. And on YouTube, The Boston Trucker, and Facebook, Mike Gaffin. And my son just signed me up for Reddit yesterday. I don't exactly know what Reddit is. He says it's where the cool kids hang out. I can't figure it out, but I'm The Boston Trucker on Reddit as of now, but I might be leaving that platform.
Well, I'll tell you, yeah, with Reddit, I actually had a listener contact me and say, that she would run my Reddit for me because I don't know what I'm doing with Reddit. And she said she'd run it for me. I said, that's fine with me. You can take it and run with it. But that's awesome. And just anybody who's listening and stuff, I mean, your Instagram has almost 62,000 followers. So you got a lot of people who enjoy the content on there. And actually, you brought me on live a couple months ago, I think it was.
Oh, that's right. Video. Yeah.
So that was the very first time we've ever talked. So great follow. People should definitely check you out. And thanks for being here, man.
Yeah, it's my pleasure. It's really, really a lot of fun. Nice talking to both of you. You guys be safe out there.
It was our pleasure. It really was. Thank you very much, Mike, for coming on and talking with us. You know, it's really cool to get to meet different people. So, yeah, and you be careful yourself. You take care of yourself.
Thank you, guys.
The best of luck to you with all the things that you're doing. It's really cool. You're really a busy guy.
Thank you. Well, the one thing about me is I don't run the Hamlet lane anymore. I'm a right lane type of guy.
Amen to that, brother. I hear that.
Slow and steady gets me there.
Well, that's the show, everybody. We really hope you enjoyed it. And if you did enjoy it, please share the show with your friends because that's the best thing you could do to help this show grow. And remember, if you have a crazy and wild experience that you've been kicking around sharing with us, please shoot us an email at hammerlanelegends@gmail.com. That's hammerlanelegends@gmail.com. Because if you don't email us, we can't get you on the show. And we want to hear about those crazy and wild experiences. So shoot us that email or go to the website, hammerlanelegends.com. Hit the contact section and you can reach us that way as well. And until next week, friends, keep the hammer down in the hammer lane. Bye.
I'm just sitting on your front porch, wondering how could I be so far from my home. And my mind is somewhere else, but when I find it, I'll patch up where it's been blown. Now I'm just floating on the breeze, and I feel I'm falling like these leaves. I must be cornerstone. Oh, but when I reach that ground, I'll share this peace of mind I found. I can feel it in my bones, but it's gonna take a little time for me to set that parking brake and let myself unwind. Shine that light on me. I'll sit and tell you. Damn, they're gone. I guess now they just weren't built to last. Yeah, I'm gonna try to make sense of what I can.